awake while I work. Turn in your Bibles, if you will, to Genesis chapter 11. We continue our study now, and we're still on human government. And we're studying the seven dispensations, all outlined in the Bible, the process by which mankind must go through to have the kingdom reign of Christ, which is the end, the last dispensation. Well, if mankind has to go through those seven dispensations, or six to get to the seventh one, then it is my position that so does man. Mankind has had 6,000 years to get there, and you and I don't. So we better do ours a little faster, or we're going to miss the boat some, or rather you will miss the boat. Our Father and our God, we thank you, Lord, again for the privilege, the opportunity, and the honor of preaching, teaching, and hearing your word. Thank you, Father, for the truth. In Jesus' name, amen. In chapter 11, starting with verse 1, we'll see that God judges human government. The way he judged human government then is the way he judges it now. But to get to human government, which is the third dispensation, if you remember, the first one was the age of innocence. That's Adam and Eve in the garden. And innocence, by definition, means no knowledge, ignorant, don't know what you're doing. And that was pretty much the way you were growing up as a child. You didn't know what the hell you were doing. Didn't even know why you were doing it. And then you became a teenager and entered the hallowed age of conscience, which means knowledge within. See, innocence means no knowledge at all. And conscience means knowledge from within. Teenagers think they know everything, and they think all knowledge comes from within them. So any rule or anything that comes from outside of them that inside of them doesn't agree with is no good, because all knowledge comes from within. That's the age of conscience. That's also the age that produced the flood, where people were destroyed off the face of the earth, deluged by too many bills, too many problems, too many worries, too much of a lot of things. And God said, well, I'm not going to flood you with water anymore. But he didn't say he wasn't going to deluge you anymore. Conscience not only means knowledge from within, but it also means obsessive, compulsive thoughts and emotions. So a person that's dealing with knowledge from within is always an obsessive, compulsive individual with an addictive personality that's highly emotional. That's what the definition of conscience is. Now we come to a situation now where all you teenagers who know everything finally come to the awareness, I don't know how to get to heaven. I don't even know where it is. And we finally find something you don't know. And we finally find someone who knows more than you do, God. God knows more than you about getting to heaven. God knows more than you about where heaven is. God knows more than you how to keep you out of hell and get you into heaven. And God did everything that's necessary for you to get into heaven. God knows more than you, as far as salvation goes. Now, the minute you get saved, we revert back to a combination of innocence and conscience. Human government is a combination of the two. Human government is where you get to the point where now you're saved, you have no more problems with what's going to happen to you after you die. But human government means now you run everything and everyone around you. You have power, you have authority, but you have no responsibility. That dispensation ended in confusion, dispersion, having people that had one language agree. They all said, I do. Do you take this man? I do. Do you take this woman? I do. For how long? Forever. Of one language, of one speech, of one accord. But because they got into human government, God came down and confused their languages so they no longer understand each other. You no longer agree on much of anything. You don't agree with God. You don't agree with each other. You don't even agree with yourself. Well, that's the end result of human government. It becomes a situation where God judges it. And let me share with you how he does it. Verse 1 of chapter 11 says, "And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech." Everybody got married. Everybody was in agreement. "And as it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, 'Go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly, and let us have brick for stone. Let's make our own building blocks, and instead of the stone, Jesus Christ, we'll make our own bricks.'" I'm not going to go back into detail on that message. You're just going to have to take my word that brick means something you make, and stone means Jesus Christ. "And slime had they for mortar." Slime, among other things, you remember, meant snot, mucus, emotions, phlegm, body fluids. I'm going to hold this whole thing together with emotionalism. And what is it that they're going to build in this situation of human government where God obviously is not the authority? "And they said, 'Go to, let us build us a city,'" which is a house, a family, an environment, "'and a tower,'" which meant a church, a pulpit, the place where God speaks, "'whose top may reach into heaven.'" In other words, we're going to reach God. We don't like this thing of God reaching us. We're going to reach him. So we're going to build a tower "'whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make a name, lest we be scattered upon the face of the whole earth.'" We better get together and agree. We better find some people that agree with us, or God's going to scatter us. "And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the children of men builded." Notice it wasn't the children of God that built this city and tower. Because you see, if God came down and he said, every city and tower that men build, every city and tower is built, I'm going to tear it down and scatter everybody. Well, then he'd be honor bound to do that with every city that was ever built. No, he said, let us go down and see the city and the tower, the house, the government, and the church that the children of men builded, not the children of God. "And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. They're all in agreement against me. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build a city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel," or Babel, "because the Lord there did confound the language of all the earth, and from there thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth." And the bottom line is they stopped building the city. It stopped being their way. Human government was judged by God then, and human government is being judged by God now. And it doesn't matter if this human government is in Babylon, in California, or in Russia. Human government always gets judged by God. Now, you're going to have to stay with me a little bit here, but I'm going to prove to you this evening that human government, as defined in Genesis 11, is communism. Communism. We're also going to find out that in our homes, unfortunately, in some areas, we are communist pinko finks. We run our homes with a communistic bent, a human government bent. Now remember, this group of people was people of all different nationalities and races and cultures and traditions that came together to live as one. However, they were forced to do that. You see, if you look at Russia, which is the best example of communism, it's a country made up of countries forced to join the state. You see now what's happened. God has condemned them and judged them, and they just kind of fell apart, didn't they? And now they all were in one agreement, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And now they're fighting each other border to border, Croatians against Galatians or whatever they are there. But here is a country that for 70 years was brought together by force, and they did what all communist countries do. These countries were forced to be of one language and of one speech. But all communist countries, all human governments, exclude God from their system. The state becomes the authority, and they change their churches into museums. That's what's always the case with human government. Now, I'm going to call it communism because that's the best example that we have. But let's think of this as human government. All through history, when human beings take over, exclude God, churches become museums. As a matter of fact, that's why our country is going down the tubes right now. Because we have too many churches in the United States of America that have been turned into museums, just like all the communist countries. You say, well, what are you talking about? What is it? See, because there's a danger that we could do the same. A museum is an institution for preserving and exhibiting historical objects, which means we can talk about religion as a historical fact. What happened then to them? And why did God judge them? And what did they do wrong? And what did God do to them? But don't you dare start telling me what I'm doing wrong and what God's going to do in terms of blessing me or judging me. This is just historical. See, churches were never meant to be historical. Churches were never meant to just be a place to exhibit the Word of God as a historical fact. But you go to any country, any communist country, and that's all the churches are, is museums. They exclude God from the government. Exclude Him completely. Now, before we go off too far, I have to make some connection between this human government and communism. So we go to verse 5 of chapter 11. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded, not the children of God. If you remember, city meant a community of citizens, your home, a municipality that's incorporated by the state, in which the state controls and tells you what you can do and what you can't do. That's El Cajon, that's any city. Tower, if you remember, meant a pulpit, what happens in the church, where the word is spoken, where it's taught, where the word is rested, where the written notes are put. That's what pulpit means. But he said, let's go down and see what the children of men have built. This children of men is an interesting word. I thought the word man was going to come from the word, Hebrew word, that means human being, flesh. No, this particular word men, this city and tower that men builded, the Hebrew word that man came from is Adam. And Adam means a human being who's a hypocrite. Adam means the name of the first man. In other words, someone who is selfish. Adam means to show blood in the face, to flush or turn rosy, angry, emotional individual, when told something they don't want to hear, they lose all their rational thought. That's what happened to Adam. But it also means, this word Adam comes from the clay which he was made from, which is red. So it literally means to be red, to be made red. But it also means to be sore and inflamed. The word red or Adam means to be sore and inflamed. And then finally, the word red or atom means to be a radical revolutionary. So now can we make a connection? Let's see. Let's see if this country then was communist. Let's see if Russia fits the mold. And let's see if your family fits the mold. Because if it does, you're going to suffer the same consequences that they did back then. Communist, and it's my position that this was a communist government. Communist means a supporter of communism. Anybody would know that. But the word communism comes from the word commonism, which means no one can be held responsible for any one thing. See, in communism, no one's responsible. We just kind of work together, and if we screw up the factory, well, we don't know who did it because no one is responsible. If there's no production, well, that's just too bad. There's no one responsible. Literally, it means a system which is owned and controlled by the state. Well, again, I think you all agree with me that that's communism, but that's not the important thing. The important thing is, why is God talking about this, and what does it have to do with our families? By definition, if you look up the word communism, and forget Russia for the time being, try to think of your home, your family, you as an individual, and us as a church family. Communism means the equal distribution of all goods and is to be achieved by revolutionary and dictatorial means. In other words, your house is my house. Your goods are my goods. This pulpit belongs to everybody. Those pews belong. None of us own anything. The state owns everything in communism. Now, if you remember, the word state means your emotional condition. It means the condition that you are individually in. In other words, your state controls everything. If we can look at that as ourselves. And what I'm trying to tell you is there is a system from the beginning of time that has changed its name, but God has always judged it the same. And it doesn't matter what we call it now. If you think just by changing the name, you somehow are going to change the character, you're mistaken. A rose by any other name would still smell as sweet. And poop by any other name still smells the same. Now, in order for a family or a church to qualify as being communistic, it has to have a one-party political structure, with the emphasis on the requirements of the state rather than on individual liberties. In other words, in order for a church to go communist, to go human government, we have to put more emphasis on what's good for the church than what's good for you. Now, ask yourself honest to God now. Has God ever, or I as his representative, as his pastor, ever put what's good for the church ahead of what's good for you? Never. And let me tell you something else. Your individual liberties have always been respected. How many times have you seen people come, badmouth me, talk about me, talk about the church, talk about all of us, leave and come back, and we treat them like if it never happened? We recognize individual liberties. I am not going to go communist, period. However, in a communist family, individual liberties mean diddly. Because you see, in a communist dictatorship, one individual is in charge of all the money. The work is distributed equally in communism, but not the money. Now, in communism, the state plans and controls all the money. All responsibility and all goods are shared by everyone. However, the authority is vested in a one-party system. There's a dictator in every communist setup. All power is in the dictator. All work and responsibility, however, is shared. In a communist country, you get to vote, but there's only one party to vote for. So in a communist family, you get to vote. We're not going out tonight. Do you agree or disagree? That's all there is. There's not we're going out or we're not going out. Which do you want to vote for? No, there's only one vote. In communism, there is no individual responsibility, so there's no individual authority. The state replaces individual liberties. The state replaces the church. The state has all the authority. Individuals share all responsibility, but no one individual is responsible for anything. The dictator gets all the benefits, but shares all the responsibility with everybody. The dictator's share is to be responsible for dictating. Now, some would say, well, you crazy, communism's only been around a few years. I took the time, the hours, to do the research and read every book that I could find on the origins of communism and the origins of human government. This is important to me. What happens to your family is important to me. I care enough about it to spend the time. Now, you may not like it, you may not agree with it, but let's agree on one thing. I care enough to spend the time to do it. What you do with it is entirely your business, but let's not lose sight of the fact that somebody cares a hell of a lot for you. I could have gotten by with just a little three men in the manger, a little three wise guys story, and we'd have gotten by this one easy. This took me hours to come up with, but it's a revelation for me too, because I'm learning every day. Communism, according to the people, American People's Encyclopedia, and all of the other reference books that I could find, is a term that was first used. The term was first used over a century ago, about 1839, in Paris, by a secret revolutionary group. However, the concept of a system of equal ownership of property has threaded its way through philosophy, religion, and economic thought since the beginning of recorded history. It wasn't called communism. What it was called is the state owns everything. There is no God. We worship trees. We worship whatever we want. You pick your own inner power. And some people said, well, I like rocks. And other people said, well, I think dogs are cool. And some people said, I like cats. And everybody chose their own God. Pretty much like in we do today. So you see, this concept is very, very old. Even the Latin writers describe the tribes across the Alps as living in such a system, and there is evidence that European, British, and Asiatic groups also lived under some form of communism. Now, if you think about it, of all the governments, of all the nations that have risen, flourished, and then fell into nothing, ended up communistic. Communistic in the sense that there was a small group at the top controlling all the money, getting all the benefits, and then there was all the peons at the bottom who were starving to death and had no rights. You can look at all of the revolutions through time. It's called different, but it always ended up the same. The first thing is they excluded God. I even went to the point, by the way, of looking and saying, well, you know, there's going to be some people say, well, you know, you get too carried away here. And so I thought, well, I'll look up some world philosophers, because I know that we have some really intelligent people in here. So I read some of the works of Plato. I picked a book he called The Republic, or Republic. And in this book, he sets up a communist. Now, this is Plato, a philosopher of the day who molded thinking. I mean, people followed this guy. Plato never claimed Jesus Christ, but he claimed he knew what he was doing. So in this work of his entitled Republic, he sets up a communistic way of life for the elect, who are to be the leaders and guardians of the whole state. In other words, the concept is one, very few people at the top, controlling everybody else. You all work, you all contribute, but I control the bucks, and I decide. Isn't that the way it is in our country even today? especially in the economy that we find ourselves now, where more than one person in the family, as a rule, has to work. I find myself in that situation. We cannot survive at the standard of living we have with just my income. I don't think Peter and Simon could survive sometimes on just my income, but the Lord provides. But the point that I'm trying to make, like it or not, we're in an economy where it takes more than one income. It takes a good income or more than one income in order for you to succeed or to get by. But in communist thinking, even if the wife doesn't work, I mean, what she does at work, if you had at home, if you had to hire a maid, you'd understand that what she does is valuable. But you see, in a communist setup, everybody gets to work and everybody pools the resources, but only one person decides what we're going to do with it. Immediately, those are the seeds of discontent are sown right away. Why? Because it goes against biblical principles. It goes against the law of God. Now, Plato went on to say that the elect were to be the leaders, the guardians of the state. This way of life, now listen to this guy. This guy is primo. This guy is, and this is a very well-respected individual for his day. This way of life, he said, will free all the peons, all the people that are not the elect, from the desires and activities of personal gain, and therefore they can devote themselves to their duties without being defiled by the gold and silver that is the source of all their unholy deeds. In other words, y'all work, but you bring me the money. Because gold and silver is going to make you unholy deeds. Now, not me, though. See, if I control the money, I'm not going to be unholy. You would, though. Is this starting to sound a little bit familiar? See, this is a situation in which everyone contributes, but a situation in which we are told, if I give you the fruits of your labors, you're just going to corrupt yourself. But the fruits of my labor and the fruits of your labor, that's not going to do anything to me. I wonder if that's why it means hypocrite. Now, to go a little further in verse 6, now we're making a little bit better connection. The Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down. There confound their languages that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. This is what always happens to this communistic, atheistic setup in which God always judges it the same way. Now, if you remember, if you have a little bit of, just think back a little bit. A few years ago, an astronaut, one of the first astronauts from Russia went up and he said, well, we're a great nation and we're in orbit now and I'm up here and I didn't see no God. There is no God. God's dead. I was in orbit. I was in heaven. We went up to heaven and there was no God. Remember that article? That was their tower, wasn't it? They were trying to prove that there was no God. Russia also says that religion is the opiate of the masses. I wonder if that's why some of you can't keep your eyes open when you start hearing about religion. Russia said there is separation of church and state. That started to begin with. But notice, it's happening to our country too. First, Russia said there's a separation of church and state. And then Russia said, by the way, there's no church now at all. And then finally they said, oh, by the way, there's also no God. But they started out just like we're starting in this country. Separation of church and state. Separation of the economy from God. The two are not together. Now you can see what's happening to our country because we have separated our state from our church. Now I see it every day in human beings who separate their personal economy from God. Separation of church and state. Pretty soon, no church, and pretty soon, no God. Right on the heels of that, judgment, Tower of Babel, confusion. You see how slick Satan is? See what he does? He takes the same garbage, coats it a little bit different, and makes everybody think it's something new. So now Russia says there's separation of church and state. And then he says there's no church, and then finally there's no God. But that's what happens with every single family in every area where we have a problem. It's where you have separated your family, what it's doing, from the church. I'm not talking about this church. I'm talking about the church. I'm talking about the situations where you make a decision in your family that has nothing to do with God consideration. Nothing. Not this church. Not me. I'm not talking about me. I'm not talking about this church. Just think of all the decisions that you make in which you had not considered God at all. Think of all the decisions that you make where you know already, even what you believe, and you go against it, where you separate the reality, what you do, from what you believe from a religious point of view. You have separated church and state. Now, the minute you do that, it won't be long before there's no church. And then after that, there'll be no God. But that's the way it started then, and that's the way it's starting in this country. The Union of Soviet Social Republics is now disbanded and dispersed. All of a sudden, after 70 years, they don't agree with each other on anything. Now there's 7 or 8 presidents. No one even knows who the president of anything is anymore. Who's got the missiles? Well, I don't know. They've got someone, somebody else has got some others, and they're fighting border to border, and it's just completely disbanded. And now there's not even a seat for Russia at the UN anymore because there is no Russia. They've been dispersed. Yet all the people are still there. All the countries are still there. Everything is still there, but they're not of one language anymore, are they? It used to be that all those people could go to the UN and they had veto power. And if the UN tried to do something because they were a member of the Security Council, they could with one vote say ixnay to the whole thing. And they did, time after time after time. Now, they ain't got no vote. They have no say in the matter. They have been totally disbanded. They're in a state of confusion. And by the way, they're not eating too good either, are they?
Not at all.
They don't speak the same language anymore. They're starving and they're freezing. And they're fighting each other. Now, you may want to believe, well, yeah, that sounds... So you made a good... It's a good story, and you read the newspaper, so what? If you don't see the connection between this and your family, then I don't know. I don't know what you have up here. That's true. But you see, the way that God judges, it's not like he's going to come down. And you know, it says, well, when he come down and he confounded their languages and he did this and that. That's the generic. That's the general terms. But there's a reference there to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 28, that I want to read to you. I'm just going to read it to you. That tells how this judgment came. Exactly how it happened, in great detail. And we start in verse... we'll start in verse 15. Now remember, this human government, this world then, was not obeying God anymore. They set up their own government, they set up their own church, they set up their own philosophy, they set up their own everything, and there's no more God. But here in verse 15 of chapter 28 of Deuteronomy, it's talking about what happened then. But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God. Notice it does not say, if thou wilt not hearken unto the Lord thy God. If thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God. So in order for you to have conversation with God, it's going to be through the voice of God. Now, I'm not here to make an argument that I happen to be that voice. All I'm here to make an argument is there is a voice. So that means no inner thoughts. It means someone speaking the word of God. But here it says, if thou shalt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. Now, if these curses are on the horizon or in your backyard or in the closet or already out in the living room, better understand why. You're not hearkening to the voice of the Lord thy God. Cursed shalt thou be in the city. Your family's not going to work too good. And cursed shalt thou be in the field. Your jobs aren't going to be too hot either. You're going to jump from job to job, place to place, never finding any real security. Always some problem because you're cursed at home, you're cursed in the family, and you're cursed in the field. Cursed shall be thy basket and thy store. Your diet's going to be poor also. What you eat is going to cause you to lose your health. Cursed shall be the fruit of thy body and the fruit of thy land, the increase of thine kind and the flocks of thy sheep. In other words, your biggest enemy is going to end up being your own body, which you happen to worship, by the way. Cursed shalt thou be when thou comest in, and cursed thou shalt be when thou goest out. I can't win. They got me coming and going. The more I make, the more I have to pay. I try to get ahead a little bit, and somebody gets sick, and there it goes out the window again. Just got this car paid for, and it just died outside. Got your curse coming and going, man. That isn't God. That's God judging human government, you communist pinko fink. The Lord shall send upon thee cursings and vexation and rebuke. You're not going to like when you're told the truth. In all that thou settest thy hand unto for to do, until thou be destroyed, until thou perish quickly. Because of the wickedness of thy doings, whereby thou hast forsaken me. Now, you can argue with me all you want, but I'm telling you this. Can you see this is what it says? Yes. Now, can you see that this applies to a lot of the areas of your life? Yes. I did. I said to myself, wow, I see some areas. See, because the biggest sinner in the room is right here in front of you. Verse 21, the Lord shall make the pestilence cleave unto thee. Until he has consumed thee from all the land, whither thou goest to possess it. In other words, the vexation, the problems, they just, no matter where you go, they follow you. It doesn't matter what you do, it clings to you. Yeah. Verse 22, the Lord shall smite thee with a consumption. There's just no way, there's not enough. There's just not enough. A consumption means you're just kind of just consuming yourself. Consumption is a person who eats food that eats them. Consumption is people who eat in such a way that they don't get enough nutrition out of their food, so their body has to rob their own. They rob their bones of calcium because they don't have nourishment. Has to rob all the other organs of iron and whatever. Their liver goes to pot because they have to consume themselves because of a nutrition-poor diet. They're suffering from the consumption. The Lord shall smite thee with a consumption and with a fever and with an inflammation and with an extreme burning and with the sword. You hate the truth. And with blasting and with mildew. That's a sickening thought. And they shall pursue thee until thou perish. And thy heaven that is over thy head will be brass, and the earth that is under thy feet shall be iron. Things are going to be hard, in other words. The Lord shall make the rain of thy land powder and dust. From heaven shall it come down upon thee, and thou shalt be destroyed. It never rains powder and dust on me. Wait a minute. Sunday, I'm going to divide some of these things. I'm just giving you, I just want to kind of break you in easy here. Verse 25, the Lord shall cause thee to be smitten before thine enemies. Thou shalt go out one way against them and flee seven ways before them. You pay off one bill, and before you know it, you got seven more to take its place. Thou shalt be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth, and thy carcass shall be meat unto all the fowls of the air, and unto the beasts of the earth, and no man shall fray them away or scare them away. The Lord will smite thee with the botch of Egypt and with the hemorrhoids. I wonder why some of you people have to have cushions on top of cushions for your little tushions. Huh? You got the hemorrhoids, man. You may not know it yet, but you got the hemorrhoids. And with the scab and with the itch whereof thou camest, canst not be healed. I can't help it if that's the way that it is. Itching, scratching away. It's not my fault. I'm just here to warn you. The Lord shall smite thee with madness. Now there's one. There's no way even in the condition that you're in would you deny that one. You're mad at everything and everybody. And blindness and astonishment of heart. This is the person you're trusting, by the way, to run your life. And thou shalt grope at noonday as the blind gropeth in darkness. And thou shalt not prosper in thy ways. And thou shalt be only oppressed and spoiled evermore. And no man shall save thee. Now, how many more years are you going to have to struggle, still not making any headway, before you realize this is talking about you? Amen. Thou shalt betroth a wife, and another man shall lie with her. Thou shalt betroth a wife, and another man will be intimate with her. This doesn't mean just carnal intimacy. This means she'll have no confidence in you whatsoever. The things she should get from you, there is no way. You're too busy with your hemorrhoids. You got an hemorrhoid problem. You're an ass, in other words. So now you've betrothed the wife, but you are thoroughly upset because she needs intimacy. She needs someone to talk to. She needs someone to lead her and guide her, and you're unwilling to do that. So he says, thou shalt betroth the wife, but another man shall lie with her. Thou shalt build a house, and thou shalt not dwell therein. You're going to be too busy working. You go to one job, and then you go to another job, and you go to another job. You see, your house is nothing more than a tent. It's a hotel. You don't live there. You just sleep there. God never intended that. He never intended that. He intended to bless you with the work of your hands so that you don't have to be gone all the time. But you betroth the wife, turn over your responsibilities to another man. Then you work so hard to build a house, but you're never there. Thou shalt plant a vineyard, and thou shalt not gather the grapes therein. You never get ahead. Thine ox shall be slain before thine eyes. Your car's never going to run right. The minute you got it paid for, you don't like it anymore, and you just can't hardly wait to get in debt for another one. That ox just doesn't appeal to you anymore. Thine ox shall be slain before thine eyes, and thou shalt not eat thereof. Thine ass shall be violently taken away from before. And there it is in black and white. And not only will your ass be taken away from you violently, but it's not going to be restored to thee. Thy sleep shall be given unto thine enemies. Oh, good. You're reading. Uh-huh. Good, good. Thy sheep shall be given unto thine enemies, and thou shalt have none to rescue them. Sheep is another way of saying chattel. It's responsibility. People's wealth was geared or measured by how many sheep they had, or in some environments, how many cattle they had. And the word cattle comes from the word chattel. Now, when you go to any bank to sign a note in which you are putting as security, anything that isn't real estate, the top of that note you will see chattel mortgage. In other words, it says all of your goods will be used by your enemies, and no one's ever going to be able to rescue you from that. Thy sons and thy daughters shall be given unto another people. They're going to have more respect for the teachers. Their friends will tell them how to dress, and your daughters and your sons will give more respect to their friends, other teenagers, dummies like them. And if they come home with yellow spikes in their hair, it's because they've been given to another people. Why? Because you're a communist. You've separated church and state. You've taken God out of your life. You've taken everything that's biblical out of your life, unless it's convenient, of course. Thy sons and thy daughters shall be given unto another people, and thine eyes shall look and fail with longing for them all the day long, and there shall be no might in thy hand. Can't tell you how many times I counsel with people who just sit in these pews. You guys don't realize how many people come here that don't belong to the church. And they'll sit here and cry their eyes out because they can't control their children anymore. Where did I go wrong? What did I do? And some of them are people that I told these things to. They left upset. But you know, they've all come back secretly because they don't want everybody to know that God was right and they weren't. Interest in taxes. The fruit of thy land and all thy labors, all the hard work that you do is going to go in interest and taxes and bills and expenses that you don't get any personal benefit out of. The fruit of thy land and all thy labor shall a nation which thou knowest not eat up, and thou shalt only be oppressed and crushed alway, so that thou shalt be mad for the sight of thine eyes which thou shalt see. In other words, it's going to make you upset. But you know what doesn't wake you up is you see how God treats people when they do obey. Maybe that makes you upset too, I don't know. Verse 35, the Lord shall smite thee in the knees and in the legs so that you won't have a leg to stand on. With the sore botch, God, that's tough with the emerods too, right? Man. The Lord will smite thee in the knees and the legs, no leg to stand on, with a sore botch that cannot be healed, from the sole of thy foot unto the top of thy head. The Lord shall bring thee and thy king, you and the one that you think knows so much, you and your counselor that has nothing to do with God, is going to bring the two of you into the same judgment. See, that's a sobering thought to me. That's why I am damn sure what I tell you, what it is. You know why? Because you and I are going to be brought to the same judgment. So I'll be very careful when I give advice. See, it's not so much that I care so much about your emeralds, but I have a real attachment to mine. See, so I just can't give out advice and say, well, if it works and it doesn't and so what, and then just my opinion. No, I got to be sure, because when I tell you something, God is saying, you are saying the same thing for yourself, friend. Whatever you're telling this person is what you're going to get. You better be sure it's God talking. This is not something I take lightly. I want you to know that. The Lord shall bring thee and thy king, which thou shalt set over thee. You get to choose who the king is over you. But understand this, you and that person are both brought into the same judgment. So see, it's not a task that someone should take very lightly. This spiritual advice, biblical advice, is something that I don't suggest that people do unless they know damn good and well what they're talking about and have a reasonable assurance that God called them to say it. Now, we're all called to hear this, but I don't think we're all called to speak it and teach it. The Lord shall bring thee and thy king, which thou shalt set over thee, unto a nation which neither thou nor thy fathers have known, and there shall ye serve the other gods of wood and stone. And thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all nations whither the Lord shall lead thee. Thou shalt carry much seed out into the field. You're going to work hard. You're going to try a lot of things. You're always going to be hustling. You're going to be out there humping and pushing all the time, trying, planting plenty. Thou shalt carry much seed out into the field, and shall gather little in, for the locust shall consume it. In other words, God says, you better get something straight right here. This is my earth, this is my world, this is my universe, and it's my rules. Yeah. Thou shalt plant vineyards and dress them, but shall neither drink of the wine nor gather the grapes, for the worms shall eat them. Thou shalt have olive trees through all the coast, but thou shalt not anoint thyself with the oil, for thine olive shall cast its fruit. In other words, it never comes to maturity. See, when an olive tree casts its fruit, it doesn't stay on the branch. It doesn't stay connected to the branch long enough to come to maturity. So what you have is a shriveled up little something on the ground that is worthless. So if you don't stay attached to the branch, you don't grow. That's wrong with Christians. And the minute they get a little bud, hey, bud, right away they think they know everything, and they cast themselves. Well, I'm this, and I'm this, and you're nothing. I'm nothing. It's only what the branch. Jesus Christ is the branch. Thou shalt have olive trees throughout all thy coast, but thou shalt not anoint thyself with the oil, for thine olive shall cast his fruit. Verse 41, thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters and shall not enjoy them. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters and shall not enjoy them. And don't tell me any different. I got some hot news for you. Your sons and daughters aren't that thrilled about you either. Communist Pinko Finkos. You've separated church and state. You've set up a one-party system and you're the dictator. Stalin? And that's what you do. You're Stalin. I just thought of that, by the way. Oh, here's one we haven't read. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them, for they shall go into captivity. Now, I looked at that and I thought, you know, that's true. Man, we got some real jerks in this church. But you know what? I enjoy you. You're funny. You're a lot of fun. I enjoy this. Don't ask me why. But you see, if I hated this work, if I used every excuse to stop doing it, if I was only available by appointment, if I changed my phone and got a 900 number, that would cure you all. $3 for the first minute, 50 cents for every minute thereafter. There is no, you wouldn't call on your best day. All I'd have to do is put a 900 number in there. But you see, all the people that God has sent here, don't ask me why, but I enjoy this. And I think there's something wrong here, really wrong. If I can enjoy you, but it can't be the other way around. Someone's under the curse. Because you see, we're all here as a family. That's obvious. So whoever you're not enjoying, you're under the curse, friend. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them. That one's going to stay with you for a while. All thy trees and fruit of thy land shall the locust consume. Here's one I hope you get. The stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. I'm not your problem. Your wife's not your problem. Your husband's not your problem. The children are not your problem. The world out there is not the problem. The stranger that is within thee, that's the problem. That's the one that's got you down. And that's the one I'm here speaking against every single service. I am here speaking against the stranger that is within you while you diligently either deny him or defend him. And then when you deny him and defend him, then you take him out there and he gets above thee very high and thou shalt come down very low. You see, like I've told you before, you have no problems external of you. Your problem is internal. Verse 44 tells us how this stranger affects our economy. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. Now, there's a principle involved here. You look at Russia and all the communist countries. They're great on borrowing, aren't they? But does one of them have a foreign aid program? Not one. Them suckers don't even pay their dues to the United Nations. They go there and they vote. They want to say, yes, I veto. Nyet, I veto that. Nyet, no. Pay your dues. Oh, I'm a little short this month. Isn't that what happens here? The ones that don't pay their dues complain the most. And then there's another group of people who, because they pay dues, say, well, that gives me authority. No, it do not. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. And he shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. In other words, the one that gives rules. The one that gives rules. See, I've tried to teach you that from a principle ever since the beginning. I've tried to share with you and say, look, give to your wife. Do this. Give to your children. Put them first. Put them first. Put God first. Put yourself last, and then God will put you first. But no, you'd rather be the tail rather than the head because you want to be close to your emeralds. I don't know what other explanation there could be. Verse 45. Maybe you ought to have them put on a chain or something. Moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee and shall pursue thee and overtake thee till thou be destroyed. How long have you been running? How long have you been planning? Oh, one of these days my ship's going to come in. This is going to happen. You're still running. It still hasn't happened. Chasing dreams. Moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee and shall pursue thee and overtake thee till thou be destroyed, because thou hearkenest not unto the voice of the Lord thy God. Not unto the writings, not unto the teachings, unto the voice of the Lord thy God. Now, you get to choose who the voice is, but once you do, you better listen to him. You should not hearken, because thou hearkenest not unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to keep his commandments and his statutes, which he commanded thee. And they shall be upon thee for a sign. Now understand what God is saying here. He says, these curses are upon you of your own doing, but they're for a sign. It's to wake you up, to show you where you're at. See, if you're out on the prairie or on the freeway or in the desert or wherever, and you don't know where you're at, the minute you see a sign that says, Yama, then you have an idea where you're at. See, that's what the sign is for. These curses are not because God's mad at you. These things aren't happening because God's punishing you. These things are happening because God says, wake up, look at the sign. That tells you where you're at. And they shall be upon thee for a sign and for a wonder, and upon thy seed forever, because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness. It doesn't say because thou servest not the Lord thy God. You're all serving the Lord thy God right now. You're here. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands, but internally, are you here in joyfulness? Because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. You see, he says, the problem is you don't serve God, the Lord thy God, with joyfulness and gladness for the abundance of all things. In other words, everything that's bad in your life, God's fault. Reuben's fault, your wife's fault, somebody's fault. But everything that's good in your life, you did that. Yeah. God says, uh-uh. Verse 48, therefore shalt thou serve thine enemies, which the Lord shall send against thee, in hunger and in thirst, and in nakedness, and in want of all things, and he shall put a yoke of iron upon thy neck until he have destroyed thee. You're not getting out of no habits, you're not getting out of no addictions, you're not getting out of nothing until you've been destroyed, or you hearken unto the voice of the Lord your God. Verse 49, the Lord shall bring a nation again against thee from far, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand. I'll show you in a minute what that means. A nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, no sure favor to the young. and he shall eat the fruit of thy cattle. It's all your credit cards, all your bills. People you don't even know make decisions somewhere that say, we come before God, we come before your... If your wife needs a new dress, no new dress. No dress for your wife. You pay us first. You send us money and you send us interest. You send us a $50 payment. And look how they treat you. Send us $50. 10 for you and 40 for us. Well, a little bit different setup with the Lord, but you don't have regard for that, so you do it the other way. Go right ahead. He shall eat the fruit of thy cattle and the fruit of thy hand, of thy land, until thou be destroyed. Which also shall not leave thee neither corn, nor wine, nor oil, or the increase of thy kine, or flocks of thy sheep, until he have destroyed thee. Now I'm going to say something here I hope you all get. Every single person in this room is now making more money than when you first came to this church. But a lot of you are still in the same boat. Curses. Doesn't matter how much you make, you still just barely eke it out. If we look just mathematically at what much increase there's been in the income, whether it's collectively between two or you individually, there's always a corresponding increase in what goes out, which means, relatively speaking, you're always in the same boat. Well, what has happened here? Strangers from afar are eating all your goods. And he shall besiege thee in all thy gates until thy high and fenced walls come down. You're not always going to hide behind what you think. Sooner or later, you're going to give in. Wherein thou, he says, and thou shalt besiege thee in all thy gates until thy high walls and fence walls comes down, wherein thy trusted. Everything you trusted in, one day you're going to give up on. It may be on your deathbed that finally, when emphysema's choking you, you might say, I don't want no more cigarettes. I don't know if that's what it's going to take. But one day you're going to stop trusting in what you're trusting now. That's the word of God. He shall besiege thee in all thy gates through all thy land which the Lord thy God hath given thee. And thou shalt eat the fruit of thine own body. You'll consume yourself. The flesh of thy sons and of thy daughters which the Lord thy God hath given thee in the siege and in the straitness wherein thine enemies shall distress thee. So that no man that is tender among you and very delicate, his eyes shall be evil toward his brother. Now understand what this is saying. Read it again very closely, because this is a very important thing. So that the man that is tender among you, womanlike, emotional, and very delicate, his eyes shall be evil toward you, his brother, and toward his wife of his bosom, and toward the remnant of the children which he shall leave. Now there is a real synopsis there of what happens in all divorces. This tender, very delicate individual who thinks they can do no wrong has an evil eye towards his brother. Everything, you can only see wrong in people. You never see right in anybody. Now, I'm here to tell you, we're all sinners, but we're also all the children of God. Now, you can look at it whichever way you want, depending on whether you're tender and delicate. But your eye is evil toward your brother, toward the wife of his bosom. You don't like me or my wife. And toward the remnant of the children, which he shall leave. In other words, you don't like your brother or those that agree with him. Because you have an evil eye. And you see, an evil eye can only see evil. That's all it can see. And there's certainly enough of that to go around. And I make my contribution daily, by the way. But if the shed blood of Christ isn't enough for you, then forget it. I don't have anything else to offer you. Verse 55, so that he will not give to any of them of the flesh of his children who shall eat, because he has nothing left, because he hath nothing left him in the siege and in the straitness wherein thine enemies shall distress thee in all thy gates. The tender and delicate woman among you, which would not adventure to set the sole of her foot upon the ground for delicateness and tenderness, her eye shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom, and toward her son, and toward her daughter. Now, I'm going to camp on that one for a minute. I happen to know the ladies in this room. And I happen to know they're tender and delicate as women should be. And I happen to know that they don't have even a desire or had no desire to even set a foot upon the ground for delicateness and tenderness. They really wanted to be wives. But because you hearken not to the voice of your Lord, your God, he said, her eye shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom. Didn't say it was going to be evil toward everyone. It's going to be evil toward the husband who doesn't hearken the voice of the Lord. And toward her son and toward her daughter. You're not going to like your husband, and you're not going to like your children either. Not that you don't love them, but see, the children become an image of the father. Now, how can you say, I don't like him anymore the way he's treating me, then have your children talk to you the same way and love them? See, women, you get caught in a real no-win situation here. And toward her young that cometh out from between her feet, and toward her children which she shall bear, for she shall eat them for want of all things secretly in the siege and straitness. A woman then ends up this way. Ladies, you know what I'm talking about. You get so emotionally starved. You get so hungry for a human being that wants to talk to you, spend some time with you, that you degenerate and degrade yourself and become a little child so you'll have a world to live in. And then your children become wrong relationships with you. Then your children become the emotional part of your life. And the crackings are starting already of a communistic takeover. Oh, we got a long chapter here. I'm going to stop right here. I'm leaving you in the middle of a divorce. How's that? I'm leaving you with your wife looking cross-eyed at you. It has a good ending, by the way. It has a real good ending. But you see, this is all characteristic of what happens in every one of our lives. And let me tell you what I did. I got a lot more to say, but I won't say it tonight. The first thing that I did when I read this, all week long, I've been under heavy, heavy siege on this thing. And I took all of this and I went back in my life and applied it to all of the areas, the marriages I were in. I said, man, I was the biggest communist pinko fink you ever saw in your life. And I, honest to God, did not realize it. But I see that in every relationship, it fell apart because I went communist. I look now in every job that went sour that I left because I didn't like it and I wanted something else. It's because I separated church and state. I wanted to be Mr. Hotshot on the job and a Christian on the weekend, and I didn't put the two together. I wanted to still pal around with my old friends in the world and be a Christian on the weekend. Separation of church and state. Pretty soon no church, pretty soon no God. And I've seen how many times I paid the price on this thing. How many times I paid this, and I didn't like my kids, and I didn't like my wife, and she didn't like me. And then she hired another guy, and I had to pay him $5,000 a week just to tell me what I already knew. She couldn't stand me. Hell, I already knew that. And then I had to hire one for me to tell her I hated her guts too. I had been doing that for years for free. Now I got to hire somebody to tell that, and she's got to hire someone. And I watch them there, and they fight back and forth. And now I'm hearing as they're fighting, well, Your Honor, I have to present another case. You know what went through my mind? Cha-ching. There goes another $100. $100 an hour this guy wanted. And that was back in the 70s. $100 an hour. I saw the cha-chings right in front. Man, the bills were unreal. And I thought, this guy must have checked with the bank. Because the minute that was all gone, he said, oh, case closed. No, bank account closed. They took it all. And now I sit before you, willing to admit this. I stand before you now as a man, willing to admit this and say, don't make the same mistake. I've already tried this. I've done this. This is me. And this is the way it worked out for me. God judged me. He dispersed us. We confounded our languages. We couldn't agree on anything. The judges had to settle it all. The lawyers had to fight over. We couldn't agree on what time it was. And we both had expensive watches. We couldn't agree on the time of day. We couldn't agree on when to meet. The hearings were postponed because it conflicted with her schedule. And then it conflicted with mine. Till finally the judge says, I'm going to hold it on this day, and if you're not here, you lose by default. Oh, put it that way, I'll be there. And then I sit here and before and I say, here are these innocent teenagers who haven't learned why they have emeralds yet, making the same mistakes and thinking somehow God's judgment is going to hit me and pass you. I'm not through yet. I have done so much research on this. When you come on Sunday, you're going to realize some things about human government that you didn't see before. And you're going to see why our nation is going to hell. You're going to see why the country is going to hell. You're going to see why the world's going to hell. But more importantly, you're going to see why your marriage is going to hell. And you're going to see why your health is going to hell with it. And if you want to do anything about it, now's the time. Don't wait until it's too late. I didn't divide as much as I normally like, but there was a lot of words here. But we'll catch up. I'm going to divide them all. And you're going to know about human government when it's over. Whether you like it or not is not the issue. The issue is you're going to know it. You may not even agree with it, but you're going to know it. You may not want it, you may not like it, but there it is. Come back and find out the rest of it. Because the end of the story is that God wants to set up a government in which Jesus rules the truth. And then you'll have everything you ever desired. One last example. I'll use my friend right there. When he came here, you remember Brad Rogers. And you remember Criselda. And I use them because they're probably the best examples that we have now. I thank God for this. And I know he won't mind me telling you this because it's the truth. There is a family that God has blessed to the tune of over $100,000 a year. $100,000 a year. This works. And God is no respecter of persons. My dream, my desire is to see you all doing that well. Or better even. I'm not doing this for my benefit. Ask the man how much I charged him for all that I told him. Ask him how much. The answer is nothing. Absolutely nothing. God wanted to give him. He wants to give it all to you. And out of what? Out of buckets and mops and brooms? Yeah. That's exactly. And toilets too. Can you imagine what he could do with the rest of you? This is not some self-centered, egotistical attempt to ingratiate myself. This is all for your benefit. I get nothing out of it from you. It all comes from the Lord. I don't know why you think I have a selfish motive. I don't know why you think I'm out to hurt you. I don't know why you have a desire to fight me like if I'm trying to do something wrong to you. When all of the evidence points in the exact opposite direction. Maybe it's the evil eye Flegel in you. I don't know. If not, maybe it's just ignorance. Learn and earn. That's what I told him. Learn and earn. And it works. Brother Weldon, would you close the service in prayer?